to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, October 16th, 2014. It's a few minutes after 2 UTC while we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, hello, hello. As the rats keep churning the little hamster wheel over here.
Wouldn't it be a rat wheel then?
Right. Good point. Well, you know, it's a, speaking of weird stuff, so there were just I go onto the Miami Herald front page, and there the you know so as our election nears, there's a debate tonight between
The fan.
So you did hear about the fan?
I have not clicked on any of the articles. I only saw the headlines.
I guess it made it into major news because I figured I only saw it because I'm looking at the Miami Herald front page. But yeah. Apparently,
people have been tweeting about it for the last hour or so.
Apparently, the dumbass current governor, decided not to walk out on stage because he put a fan, and apparently
because his opponent put a fan.
No electronic. I guess he must be from some kind of society where they are able to communicate information through fans. It said his campaign contended electronic devices were not allowed in the debate. I fail to understand how you could argue that a fan is an electronic device.
Oh, it depends on the fan. Like if it's depends a fan, there's some fancy fans that have electronics in them.
I guess you're right. It could be, you know.
But I saw pictures of these fans. They looked like normal fans to me. But you know, whatever.
Yeah, it looked okay. So anyway.
But
I think that probably really helped him. Can I be honest?
You don't think this helped him?
Not particularly, no. I really don't think so.
You think it made him look silly?
Yes.
Hmm.
What does the Twitter world think?
A lot of people were making fun of it, yes. But other people were comparing it to Ronald Reagan saying, I paid for this microphone in the debate against George Bush in the Republican primaries in 1980.
He paid for the microphone?
This is a famous quote. There was a debate, and they kept trying to cut off Ronald Reagan because his time was up.
Okay.
And Ronald Reagan pounded his fist on a table and says, "I paid for this microphone. I'm going to finish my comments or whatever." And he finished his comments, and that was on TV everywhere. "I paid for this microphone. I paid for this microphone." Of course, he didn't actually pay for the microphone, but it didn't matter. That ended up being the headline coming out of that debate. And that was in the New Hampshire primaries in the 1980 thing. And, a lot of people think that the way, it was one of the turning points in the campaign where before that you could imagine that maybe somebody besides Ronald Reagan would be the nominee. Very soon after that, he was, clearly, okay, it's going to be Reagan. I don't remember all the details.
So that was seen as a positive.
It was seen as a positive because he took control of the situation.
I see. Okay.
And he stood up and they were trying to make him stop talking and he made sure he got his point across.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
And I don't remember all the dynamics of the 1980 campaign. I was nine.
I might have some
of these details wrong, but.
Yeah. Well, I got to admit that I was nine and as well. And I was in Puerto Rico. And to be honest with you, I don't think I was able to get much information on that.
Anyway, we do have a few things to talk about. We're going to talk. Yvonne was subject to some inappropriate conversations over the last week that he wants to share, because of course, when you have inappropriate conversations, you want to share them.
Yes.
There's this Gamergate thing that's been going on. We're going to talk about Ebola again. And the markets have not been having a great week. Before we get to all that, I just want to mention a couple quick things. First of all, I spent a lot of time last week talking about being sick. I'm not going to get into it in detail here, but I'm still sick. I'm not like I was last week, but stuffy head has never gone away completely. My asthma is bothering me. I still have low stamina. However, I had scheduled this week as a week off to work on personal projects at home.
And?
Well, I am actually taking the week off. I'm doing things. So I'm as long as I'm doing relatively quiet things, I can I can do what I want. And I'm probably being a little slower at the stuff I want to do than I want to do. Like, I was talking about relatively quiet things. On Monday, I built a damn IKEA bookshelf, one of these big 5x5 Exhibit things. And that sort of kicked my ass. But but I got it done. But, you know, so I'm like, it's low grade. It's not like, right. I mean, a few days last week, it was bad enough that I like a few hours and I was done. It's not quite that this week. It's just sort of just there and dragging on everything, which is really freaking annoying still, because it's been almost 2 weeks now. And my wife has been sick that entire time, too. So it's whatever. But I will say, you know, based on some of the conversations we had, I tweeted this when I did it, when I walked out of work on Friday, I opened up my phone and I deleted all my email accounts from my phone and from my iPad, from my work email accounts and my work calendar, all that kind of stuff, just gone. Oh. And I did bring home my work computer, but I have not touched it once. It's sort of the emergency backup if they call me or anything like that. And I did, a few hours ago, I did get a call from the work switchboard. It was a missed call. I didn't pick it up when it was happening because I actually had I was on the phone with my dad, actually. But they did not leave a voicemail. And it was only the switchboard number, so I have no idea who called me. I'm like, whatever. If it was important, they would have left a voicemail.
That's true.
And so I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm done. I will Monday morning. I know I have an 8:30 a.m. meeting Monday morning.
And you're gonna try to get there early.
I'll try to get to work around 8. And around the moment I get to work, I will put my email back on my phone, and I will open my work laptop and I will see what's up, but I have no intention of looking at any of that stuff before then. You know, if something really critical comes up, they will call me and they will leave a message. But other than that, I'm not even thinking about it. Other than to say, I'm not even thinking about it.
How do you feel so far with a few days of no, nothing from...
I like it. I mean, I haven't gotten as much done as I hoped to at home, but I've gotten a few things done, and I'm sort of relaxing. I'm not worrying. I'm for the stuff I'm doing at home, there was a list of things that I kind of hope to get done this week, but I'm trying not to, like, worry about it too much. I'm, like, doing things at whatever pace seems natural. If I need to take breaks for something, I'll take breaks. If I want to, like, go have a long lunch, I'll go have a long lunch, and I'm not going to worry about, oh my God, I have to do this stuff. I've only got 3 hours and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm just taking it easy. I'm doing the stuff I want to do. If I don't get everything done that I hope to get done this week, oh well, I'll deal with it.
Feels nice, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm like, God damn, I need to do this more often. You know, and yes, someday I need to do the real vacation where I go somewhere and I don't even have personal projects to work on. I'm just sitting somewhere or doing completely relaxing stuff. Someday I'll do that. But for now,
this is
just about perfect. I mean,
it's like, a start.
You know, I built this shelf for my office and I rearranged my office and I cleaned my office for the first time in like forever. And I'm like happy. It's all nice. I like how it's set up now and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like I've been meaning to do this for like probably a year. And so I took the time to do it. And it's a good thing. And I'm working on a little bit of the polling 2016 stuff was one of the main goals of this week. But honestly, I haven't gotten to much of that yet. So that's the main order of business for Thursday and Friday this week. But whatever. And then Saturday and Sunday, I mean, I'm not working then either, but the kid is not in school those days. So those don't count.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, as long as he's home, you know, I can't like...
It's like an earthquake.
I can't get into a groove doing sort of stuff, you know.
It's like an earthquake.
Yeah, yeah. So and today Wednesday I did in the morning, and I wasn't expecting this until the day before it happened. But his school called my wife and said, you know, they needed more drivers for a school field trip. So, you know, in the morning, I went on a school field trip to a pumpkin patch.
Oh.
You know, so I wasn't doing stuff at home being productive, but I went on a school field trip to a pumpkin patch with a bunch of 5-year-olds.
There you go. That's cool. There you go.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. So they all got to pick their own pumpkins and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, and the one other thing I wanted to mention before we get into the real topics is probably in the time period between when we record this and when I put it out, Apple is having another event. We'll talk about anything interesting that comes out of that next week rather than speculating about it today.
Yes.
Sound good? Okay.
Sound good. All right.
So let's... Let's actually take a break, and then we'll come back with your inappropriate conversations. So we'll be back after this thing, whatever it is.
The thing.
The thing.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
See, lovely cough still.
Nice.
Anyway, and we said the thing, but I didn't mean, like, you know, that the thing from the Fantastic Four. That's not what I mean.
No?
No.
No.
A big, like, orange rocky thing.
I'm sure it'll be very disappointing.
Okay, so you had something where you were in some sort of social situation and...
Okay, here's the thing. I had been taught when I was a child, very much, that in company that you don't know, especially, you don't talk about religion and you don't talk about politics.
Because you don't know if the person that you're talking to is going to have a view very divergent from your own, and it ends up getting tense.
Correct. Okay. And, you know, and that I always thought it was a very good rule. And I, you know, when Sam and I did this show 20 plus years ago on the radio, one of the things that I found, Puerto Rico politics, from where I'm from, the debate is intense. Okay. All right. I mean, when people talk about it, if you have heard a radio show, I mean, people, when they were actually campaigning, there were quite a lot of people that were active, and they were very intense. And let's face it, when we were talking about in the early 90s, the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, it's not that big, you know, if you think about it.
Well, certainly, there were a lot, some significant differences, but certainly compared to the polarization today, you know, if you go back 20 years ago.
And people weren't as rabid and fervent about any of it.
Well, yeah, memories fade, though. I mean,
look at
what was going on in the Clinton administration. That was there's some pretty strong things.
Yeah, but you're talking about 97, 98 as this crescendo started. I'm talking about between the period of time we were in college, which is 89 to 93, just about the start of the Clinton campaign. We're really talking about the period of George Bush, you know, senior. Okay, back then.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't. I'm sorry, but you did not. I don't recall having ever sat at a table at dinner or somewhere, or like as has happened to me the last couple of weeks, being on a business trip and being basically like Jesus for about an hour lectured on pie. I have basically had to tell the guy, listen, you're not going to change my mind. Shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear it anymore. You know. And so, I mean, because I had one guy, okay, who, friend of mine, okay, co-worker, but the guy just wouldn't shut this trap about politics, okay? And I'm just like, and he has very different politics than mine. And I'm just like, you know, really? You know, what the hell? I mean, and religion, okay, as well. And I'm like, dude, I'm just, you know.
You just let me eat my dinner.
The guy was questioned. Well, this was like, well, I forgot that this was before. Well, I brought the subject because what brought it to a crescendo. First, this happened to me on my trip. Then this happened to me while I was at dinner. Okay. So this is two different occasions the last 2 weeks. And I'm like, the guy was questioning because he asked me, look, I do go to church, but honestly, I'm agnostic. Okay. Or I may, you know. And the guy was like all over. I mean, the guy was like pounding on me about God or whatever. I said, listen, dude, I'm agnostic. I mean, I'm sorry, but you're talking to the wrong person. Well, how could you? Listen, dude, I made my decision a long time about this. I didn't just sit down and scratch my balls one day and decide, you know, that's what I'm going to be. So, you know what? You're not going to go in a fucking car ride and now talk me into something different. You know?
So wait, you're in a car together.
I'm in a car and driving he's like for trying, about an hour and a half. Yes,
and he's trying to like bring religion to you.
Yes.
Okay. I can see that being annoying.
Yes. Okay. And then so then we go to this wedding and we're sitting down at the table, and you know we got sat down at a table with a few people from the family. Okay, and two people that me and my wife had never met before. Okay, had no idea. And so we were talking about children's TV programming and stuff and whatever. And my wife has this thing. We're having this debate because I'm like, you know, let's face it. When I was a kid, I used to watch like Tom and Jerry. So the other day I said, my wife is adamantly opposed. My son can't watch any of the cartoons I watched as a little kid.
Because they're too violent and stereotypes and all this kind of stuff.
Yes. Okay. And I'm like, and I was just like, what the hell is just Tom and Jerry, for God's sakes? Give me a freaking break. Well, anyway, so we're talking about cartoons and talking about TV. This guy who is this lady's husband that was right beside, all of a sudden decides to open his trap and chime in and say to announce to the entire table how he is a gun owning conservative. Okay. And basically that, the 60s ruined the United States and how any liberal is an idiot, okay? And I'm like, just on and on. And I'm like, what the fuck is this, okay? Since when did it become acceptable in this fucking country to do this kind of shit? People did not used to be this impolite.
Well, and to level the playing field, I have been in plenty of conversations where it's been on the other side, where it's been liberals talking about how evil conservatives are.
I agree on the other side as well.
And if you listen to some of our shows, we've sometimes been pretty opinionated about how certain people with certain opinions are stupid.
We talk about this. Yeah. Okay. All right. This is a forum where we talk about this.
This is something that. It's advertised, you know. This is a current events discussion show.
Yes.
I could say that such and such is a stupid dumbass for advocating whatever policy they're advocating.
Right.
However, if you're having dinner with people that you know them a little bit, but you don't know them well, like you don't necessarily start out the conversation with conservatives are dumbasses and backwards whatever, because all you know, the person next to you is one, and you don't want to unnecessarily cause offense.
To be honest, look, even that entire conversation, as he said, because I think the whole trail end had something to do with some kind of like Muslim conspiracy to take over the world, and that it's already working. Okay, by the way. How he said that their plan is like it is already working, and I look. Instead of me going into something, I just
now having
said, I politely said at the end, well, you know what? I just don't agree with anything you just said. That's all I said.
And I believe you texted me or emailed me or something to say that part of this was your wife kicked you to stop you from getting
from saying. Oh yeah, before I said anything, my wife. Well, I wasn't planning on it, but my wife under the table went just freaking kicked me. Boom! Just I'm like, well, I wasn't planning on saying anything, but then after that, I go and I get the other guy on the other side of the table who's a fucking raging anti-Semite. And I'm like, fuck, after that part, I just said, look, give me a... I just said...
A different guy.
A different guy. And I I said, to hell with this. Get me off this fucking table. I said, honey, let's go. Let's go to another table.
So now, one thing I will say is, though, one of the things that's actually unfortunate, I think, is that it's not easily possible. I mean, it is possible in certain places, but, like, it would be really nice if in the situation that you just described, you and the person you disagree with could end up having a civil conversation where you exchange viewpoints and maybe both of you learn something about the other one's point of view.
That would be true if but people were open to a civil conversation anymore, but they're not.
But yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, what tends to happen is everybody takes all of this stuff so personally.
Yeah.
So personally. And I certainly admit, in certain situations, there are certain viewpoints where I have to force myself to say, okay, let's listen to their point of view. Let's try to understand where they're coming from, because my natural reaction is just like, I can't believe they're even saying that. That's so wrong. But, you know, it's right now, in many cases, if you really and truly have people that, you know, sort of fundamentally disagree on sort of some core issues, it's very rare to get a situation going where you really do have a constructive conversation there, as opposed to each side getting more and more tense and aggravated the longer the conversation goes on. And you're lucky if you don't end up with them, with everybody yelling at each other, if not fisticuffs.
Right.
You know,
And in Puerto Rico, listen, let me put it to you this way. The reason why that was a very important rule in Puerto Rico, forget about fisticuffs, it started that, sometimes it devolved into gunplay.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like, no. I'm like, you just, you know, no, can't do that, no.
I try, like, whenever I'm in those kind of situations, outside of this show, to be honest, outside of this show, whenever there's a political discussion, like I've been at like work lunches occasionally when like political topics come up, even if people are saying things that I kind of agree with, I tend to go into a mode where I'm mostly listening,
right, and not
engaging in the conversation because I feel like, first of all, I get my fill. You know, on when we record this show. But also, I think, like, you know, if I was really, like, I don't feel like I have all the facts necessarily on right in front of me. I'd want to look things up. It's a contextual thing, too. Like, okay, these are a bunch of people from work. Do I really want to get into a detailed political conversation with them? No. You know, because, like, it's going to... Because I'll be thinking about whatever the hell they said, you know, subconsciously when I interact with them for work. And, you know, okay, it's sometimes okay. I mean, I've certainly had conversations about political things with people at work, but it's just my general tendency is, you know, if those kinds of conversations come up, listen. Don't try to get emotionally invested into it. Try to learn what you can out of it. But honestly, even some with my own family, like, you know, my daughter gets very, very passionate, let's say, about certain types of issues. Mm-hmm. And that's great, actually. You know, it's good for young people to have that kind of passion. But even when I agree with her on the fundamental issue, I start getting bothered by the fact that she is a lot of the time not giving sort of due diligence to the other side, you know, and sort of, so I end up wanting to play devil's advocate and saying, you know, well, look, okay, but have you considered this, this, and this, even if I agree with her, because it's sort of like, everything seems to be so black and white, like this is right, that's wrong. And, you know, even if I agree with you that, yeah, that's right, it's not always that clear a picture. And like the other side, if you try to put yourself in the shoes of the other side and try to understand where they're coming from, you know, you may still not agree with them, but maybe you get to the point where you realize they're people, they have their views aren't like born out of being fundamentally evil, maybe unless you're talking to somebody from ISIS in Iraq or something, I don't know. Right. But generally speaking, the person you're talking to isn't sort of fundamentally bad. They're just coming from an entirely different place with an entirely different set of, you know, sort of fundamental core values that that are important to them.
But a lot of it, I think, also has to do with, our current media versus the media that we had 20 or 30 years ago.
Well,
because the media as it is right now really inflames people to be even far more, passionate or irrational to a certain extent. I mean, I call it and I'm talking media on both sides. I'm not talking just, conservative. I mean, I was going through so I have a number of tabs, which different headlines from different places. And I don't like to read the Huffington Post, can I be honest? But I have it just to see what's on the headlines. And today, for example, just today, right? I mean, you go into headline, for example, it says massive red letters, Ebola patient flew one day before symptoms. I'm really? Really? I mean, give me a fucking break. I mean, this other guy who I was talking about earlier, I mean, the guy reads the guy is reading the Drudge Report all the time, for example, does other stuff. And I was telling him, one thing I said, because the problem is that, all this stuff and whatever. And I said, dude, let me ask you a question, because you're reading Drudge, right? Okay, so you don't think that the press has any responsibility. So let me put it to you this way. So you think that I find that the liberal headlines are worse than the conservatives. Really? Really? So, and by the way, don't you think that the people who wrote them have any responsibility? Because if I take a story, right, and I put a headline like this on top of it, right? Okay, so I'm basically throwing everybody into a panic. Don't you think that as a writer you have a responsibility about that? No, the writer doesn't have any responsibility. I'm okay. Well, so you're yelling fire in a theater. You're basically, I don't know, now I've got this Ebola panic we're talking about later. Nobody has responsibility. But no, they don't. But people, this is what they're reading. They're reading about politics and everything basically with, with this kind of headlining.
Yeah.
And it gets everybody all in a fucking, boiled to death thing.
Yeah. The other thing I want to point out, and I've read a few articles about this over the last year. I can't point you at any. It's been too long ago. But on a lot of these issues, too, a significant portion isn't because you can do things carefully word a question so that it sort of makes it more generic and removes sort of certain signifiers and get people to sort of come to the opposite conclusion than they usually have. But what you find in a lot of these situations is the answers to some of these political questions, are not by any, are not sort of, okay, we've looked at the issue rationally and we've come to conclusion X. Or anything like that. Instead, it's fundamentally I've seen the words used. It's a tribal signifier. This is agreeing with this set of precepts, whatever that set of precepts is part of a sort of a community building thing of how you identify with your group. And, your group may be conservatives, your group may be liberals, your group may be city people, your group may be rural people, whatever. But in addition to a lot of the things you would expect, there's also a lot of cultural things that come with that, or you're identifying as a conservative Christian, you're identifying as a this or that. And some of those positions have, quote unquote, the right answer that group is supposed to have.
Right.
So there's a lot of cultural pressure there that says, saying anything different isn't just, hey, it's an honest disagreement. We've looked at the facts and now I think this instead of that. No, it's a rejection of the group that you come from and that you're a member of. And so if you come from one of these communities that feels very strongly about a set of issues and you know, saying something opposite to that isn't a neutral act. It's an act that is putting you at opposition to your community. And so it could lead to you being ostracized, could lead to all sorts of things happening. And of course, depending on, you know, the issue and where you are and what group we're talking about, that could be more or less significant. But even in very low stakes situations, there's a huge amount of pressure to conform. And, you know, and you can say, well, yeah, but society as a whole, they're a bunch of conservatives, a bunch of liberals. If you disagree on some issues and you take the liberal position, big deal. There's still plenty of people who agree with you. Okay, yeah, maybe, but they're not your group. They're not the people that you hang out with. Think about how hard it is to be the one guy in your peer group who thinks something is bullshit when everybody else thinks, of course, that's how it is. That's hard. And so a big part of what, you know, how these things get so ingrained is because the right answers to certain political issues become not just, hey, this is what I think after I've looked deeply into the issue and reflected on how, you know, it balances against my core values, which would be nice, but it's got all this other baggage along with it.
No, it's a lot of peer pressure from society. I get that, you know, and the society where you live in and so forth and so on. And people very easily succumb to it. I get it. I know. But it's just, I mean, it's... But even, you know, having those opinions on one side or the other, I think that I just don't understand what it... I mean, I can't... put my I can say a couple of things, but I'm just, you know, throwing darts at the wall guessing. I mean, maybe some educated guess, but it's not, you know, it's just a guess as to what has caused this decline in civility. And I'll tell you what, it's not even just that. It's not even just in that kind of discourse. I was talking the other day, it's a few friends of ours going to Disney, and I remember, like, for example, being in a public place. You know, 30, 40 years ago, people were far more polite in the street. Okay, you know, just in general, like mm-hmm. in a place, like at a park or something or whatever. And I just, you know...
I think that varies a lot from place to place, too, though.
Well, I'll put a place, you know, Disney. We were just talking about the fact that I remember when I was a kid that I went many times to Disney. The people were extremely polite as you went around there. And the last time I went, I was just shocked by how the level of rudeness that was there by people. And I actually talked to a friend of mine who had just come back from a trip that had just a very incredibly ugly incident happen with some other family during their trip to Disney. And I was just like, I mean, you know, the guy from the father of the other child, like, came over to, like, to her and, like, basically was threatened to kick the shit out of her, you know, stuff in front of a whole bunch of people. I mean, you know, really nasty stuff. And I don't know. You know what? This kind of stuff, honestly, and I know that I'm not being, like, wishful thinking in terms of, like, looking back at the past. This kind of stuff just didn't happen that much back then. I mean, you wouldn't hear people coming back from Disney and telling you stories about how they had an encounter like this. Mm-hmm. And now it's, like, all the time. And I don't know. There's just something that in our fiber as people overall, where we're at, where that level of civility just people just think it's just not necessary anymore, and I blame it to a certain extent to how the media discourse has changed on a lot of things and how we've just accepted a lot of people on television and everything to just, you know, be able to do that to other people. And it's just not, I just don't think it's good. That's just my
yeah point. And, well, and one of the yeah, I want to move on, but one of the things
that... Yeah, and we should, because we got a lot more to cover.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people have speculated that a significant part of this, too, is just how society has gotten more, less local, let's say. you know, people commuting a long distance to work and not knowing their neighbors and having less of their lives in the area that's, you know, sort of physically proximal to them. So, and dealing a lot more often with people that they don't know and never expect to see again. So, like, it's one thing to be rude to somebody who, you know, you're going to see every day or every other day for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's another thing, as a lower barrier for a lot of people.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
To be rude to someone that you're going to see this guy at Disney and you will never see them again in your entire life.
Right. Maybe. Yeah. Hadn't thought about that.
I mean, and like, you know, I couldn't tell you the name of a single one basically of the people in my neighborhood.
So basically all these people were always dicks. What happened is what kept them in check before was that they were like, well, I'm going to see this guy again, so I don't want to be rude to them now. But now that you don't see them anymore, fuck them.
Right.
I actually buy into that argument. Can I be honest?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. And you know, like I said, you know, just even my neighborhood, I don't know the name of any of my neighbors. And there's one.
That's terrible. Sam, how long have you lived there?
Like 3 years.
Jesus. Okay. That's terrible.
Well, and it's relatively normal these days. And there are one or two of them I've interacted with occasionally. Like
my neighbors.
Like the one right across our back fence, their dog keeps digging through into our backyard. So we've met them a few times when we've taken their dog back to them. But I don't know their names.
So you didn't think to say, hi, my name's Sam and yours is?
Thought didn't even enter my mind.
Okay.
And I know it should. I mean, they seem like nice people. You know, now there's this other neighbor who's kind of a pain in our ass, you know, but whatever, you know, I don't know their name either.
No.
Anyway. We did know the names when we first moved in the house immediately next door to us. They were really nice. They came over, they introduced themselves. We exchanged information, and they moved out like a month later.
So, well, that's probably why they were so eager to give you the information.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, let's take a break. We're out of here. Well, we're not out of here. We'll be right back. We'll talk about Gamergate. Back after this.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And we're back. And speaking about being civil to people, Gamergate. Wait,
yeah, there you go. Gamergate, for God's sakes.
So do you want to give the quick summary?
You give the quick summary. I took the brunt on the previous topic.
Oh, God. Excuse me. See, okay, still sick.
Keep dying on me. Yes.
Yeah. You'll get this next week. It's contagious over the internet, you know, just like Ebola.
Just like Ebola? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's not spread any rumors now. Okay. Ebola is not contagious over the internet. Okay, all right. So.
Yeah, but it might evolve. Anyway. Yes, yes, it's a computer virus now. okay. Gamergate. Bottom line, there were a few women involved in the gaming industry, some journalists, some developers, some others, they were speaking about various things related to how the gaming industry treated women, and then there was a backlash against them. I'm trying to keep the really quick summary here. And a lot of a lot of the gaming community started fighting back against these women. And The Gamergate, quote unquote, group, loosely organized, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It cares about journalistic integrity in the gaming industry, like revealing conflicts of interest, things like that. So that, like, if you're reviewing a game, you say something if you... if you know the developers behind the game or you've been paid or something like that, blah, 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 blah. However, almost everybody other than the Gamergate people themselves seem to agree that, and there's apparently evidence from IRC logs and things like that, that this is just essentially a smokescreen, and really they're trying to harass these particular women who were pointing out things like, games that have sexist depictions of women or lots of violence against women, or pointing out, underrepresentation of women, or pointing out that that these days the gaming is a much bigger market. There are lots of people who aren't sort of,
nerds.
15 to 25 year old white males.
Nerds.
Doing gaming, yeah, nerds, and that in any case, what this has escalated to is in these women who've been vocal about this kind of stuff, and it's not just one or two. There's like a bunch. There are a few that have been really visible, but there's a bunch here have been harassed.
Harassed. It's
a light word. It started with harassment, but there have now been death threats. These
rape threats.
People have been posting
their address published,
publishing their addresses and contact information, and encouraging people to go there in person. Like I said, there have been death threats, rape threats, this has been blowing up over the last couple months, really. Just in the last week or two, I've seen it. I've been seeing references to this for probably 2 months, but in the last week, I've seen it become a much, much more mainstream and in a lot more places and publications talking about this. So that's a really high level summary. And yeah, there are all kinds of places online that you can go if you want sort of tutorials on the history and the background and who did what when and all this kind of stuff. But that's the real high level. So one example, Vox is really good at these sort of high level summaries. They did one on October 13th, Gamergate, Here's Why Everybody in the Video Game World is Fighting, by Todd Vanderwerf. And, it goes through the whole history and a lot of back and forth here. So, but that's the quick summary. So what do you think, Yvonne?
I mean, what do I think? I think, there was some. I tweeted this article about, some of the things that would happen in Silicon Valley, and I don't go there as much anymore. I used to go there a lot, but one of the things that always shocked me was, number one, very male. I mean, Santa Clara County, mm-hmm. I mean, this was like years ago already, had the worst ratio, I think, outside of Alaska, if not worse than Alaska, it was like very close, of like men to women, okay? The population was north of 60% male, less than 40% female, okay? That culture was not a culture that was very inclusive of women, even the ones that were there.
Yeah.
Looks down on them, looks down on their intelligence, well, I will
and,
say.
And the whole tech industry has this problem. And a number of companies in the last, 6 months have started publishing sort of diversity figures, which makes them all look pitiful.
And I will look. I will admit, when I was younger, okay, I went to an all men's school. Mm-hmm. I knew very few high school. There were very few women that I actually knew personally that were very smart. Okay, I mean, I actually, I didn't know almost any who had like the same like scores and stuff. And it got to a point where I thought that, you know, well, what the heck? I mean, aren't just and it had nothing to do with the fact I learned as I got
older. It's what you were exposed to.
And yes, it had nothing to do with
that. Then you got to university and were like, oh, wait.
And then I got to university, and then I got to work, okay, all right, at HP. And I remember
where we went to school was kind of male-heavy as well. So.
It was, because where we were school was very male-heavy. Carnegie Mellon was extremely just as male-heavy, if not maybe worse than Santa Clara. Yeah. Okay, so it wasn't really that much even at school, even though at school I did meet some. There weren't that many. Okay, let's be clear about this. Okay, I mean, even like my MBA school, for God's sakes. I mean, when I went to get my MBA, it was 90+% male. Okay, now, but actually, it was really more when I got to work. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Where I mean, I will tell you that, you know, look, I wound up working with a lady that, damn it, I mean, that devil was a hell of a lot smarter about a whole bunch of stuff than I was. And I was like, damn, okay, all right, well, okay, you proved me wrong. Okay. I'm like, you know, I believe I'm a believer now. And I think it was like, I don't think that I went and I was like disdainful of them. I mean, because look, I worked with some, I think it was, and actually I had what I thought that they couldn't do, I had been narrowing it down as I met more than could. Okay, all right. And I had a very, and actually at that point I was already pretty, you know, I think by that point where I met when I met her, I was pretty sure that I would meet one. I just hadn't met them yet. Okay, I was already past that. I'd gone from like, I'm going to say in my teens to where like, damn it, what? They're all just women stupid. To getting through college or whatever, realizing, damn, there's a lot of smart women out there, to then finally meeting a whole bunch that just freaking like just blew my socks off, clobbered me. I'm like, okay, all right. Okay, you win. I'm like, you know, kind of a thing. So,
well, look, I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
But what I was saying is just some of these guys culturally just don't get out of that hole. I mean, if you went to Carnegie Mellon, then you fucking go to like Silicon Valley and work in Santa Clara County, for God's sakes, and you don't fucking get your head out of there. I mean, you wind up believing this bullshit.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it is about sort of you're right. What you're exposed to and the culture it engenders, like a culture of a place where, you know, the vast majority of something are 20-something white males. Yeah. Is vastly distorted from quote unquote the real world.
Absolutely.
I mean, and I'll tell you, you know, I like where I work. You know, I don't want to get too much against where I work, but it is another kind of place like that where I think, and compared to, you know, a couple other places I've worked in the past, I actually feel the absence of women there. I mean, there's certainly some women there, but they're, you know, it's predominantly male. And also age is a big part of this as well. Like, I'm 42, 43, somewhere around that. I forget. But you know, I'm probably in the top 2 or 3% age wise in the company.
Wow. Really?
Well, in my part of the company, let's say. Okay. I mean, maybe 5%, but I mean, almost everybody. You know, the vast majority of people seem like they're in their 20s with management folks in their 30s. You know, people in their 40s, let alone above, are extremely rare birds.
Fuck.
You know, like, I worked at Merrill Lynch before this, and there were plenty of, you know, people in their 50s and 60s at Merrill Lynch.
Oh yeah.
Here it's like, you know, I would have to think really hard to like find somebody, you know,
I'm an old like tech said, guy.
People,
okay, let's
people
be realistic.
Older than me are rare.
I'm an old tech guy. I mean, that is who I am. I'm a guy who's worked at old tech companies my entire career. And I remember that when I joined HP and I was like 20-something, I mean, I was the opposite. I was the youngest guy by far. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Well, and I remember there. Being the youngest guy. It was a while ago, but yeah
shit.
And yeah. Now I'm like, you know, I'm all, you know, it's like, you damn kids.
I know.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I mean, some very smart kids, I should say, you know, and nice kids. But still, I'm like, where's the rest of the world here? Where are the older people? Where are the women? And yes, to a large degree, it's also, you know, where are the black people? They're very few. You know, you've got the white guys. You've got a good contingent from India. In our group, we've got some good contingent from Eastern Europe. And some others sparkled here and there, but like, it's certainly like the makeup, and some Asians of various sorts. Yeah. But the makeup is so, so different than the public at large. Mm-hmm. And it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you wonder why you have sort of people coming at things in a way that is very insular and thinking of things one way. Now, having said that, there's still, like, you look at this Gamergate stuff. It's not just people in the gaming industry, although yeah, there's a lot because, of that. It's the actual yeah. gamers, too, which, you know, you can argue sort of the traditional gamers, you know, are sort of, like I said, the 15 to 25 demographic. 15 to 25 white male demographic are the ones who, you know, were traditionally known as here. These are the gamer geeks. These are the guys going out and buying specialized gaming hardware and playing in all hours and spending all kinds of money on this kind of stuff. And that's sort of your traditional market for a lot of these games. And part of what's being pointed out is that's the old world, and that is changing very fast. Because now it's not, you know, okay, sure, there are always going to be people who buy these high-end computers specifically for the purposes of games. But, you know, now by far the majority of gaming is people on their damn phones.
Yes.
And the majority of that is more casual type games. They're games targeted to all kinds of different audiences. It's not just those geeks anymore, you know. And it's changing that whole world, and it's changing it rapidly. And so you get people who, like, you know, you get people pointing out, for instance, that, you know, maybe it's not okay that in, you know, a lot of these games, you know, you can go around, you know, shooting and beating up on women. And of course, a lot of these games you shoot and beat up on everything. There are a lot of very violent games, but there are some that are very, you know, very specifically have segments that are depicting violence against women. They're also, you know, this typical stereotypes, like any woman you ever see in a video game is thin and busty, you know.
Yes.
And all this kind of stuff, and people. All the, you know, if all people are doing is pointing out some of this stuff and saying, hey, maybe we could do this better. And then you get death threats for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let's face it. Okay, all right, look. I mean, one of the things, you're creating a video game, you're creating fantasy. Okay, all right, so I get it. You want to put people, like, you don't put, like, a whole bunch of, even, like, from the men's side, a whole bunch of fat slobs in there. You put these guys that are all, like, look like they were just, they just spent, like, you know, 100 weeks, like, doing triathlons and stuff and lifting 1,000-pound weights or whatever. I get that. Okay, listen, don't get me wrong. But here, my whole point is that, you know what? Listen, if somebody criticizes a game for that, listen, it's just criticism, for God's sakes. It does not, in any stretch, like, should allow people to go and get threatened with rape and death.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there are articles.
Daddy,
yes, Alex.
I have soda out.
You have soda out? Okay. Bye. Anyway, yeah, and I mean, there's some of these articles that were just pointing out what I just pointed out, that the gaming industry is changing, that there are much bigger audiences out there, and that perhaps the gaming industry should change a little bit to adapt to that, and perhaps having more women involved would help with some of these things.
Right.
And you know, these guys, death threats, really? Threatening to show up at people's house and rape them? Really? This is just ridiculous. And you know, they try to have the argument about, like, you know, journalism and journalistic ethics. And okay, fine. That's an interesting debate to have. And I absolutely accept the idea that, you know, hey, if you're writing a review of a game or something, it's good to like disclose any conflicts of interest you have. Okay, that's a good concept in general, but completely irrelevant to this.
Right. Completely irrelevant.
Completely irrelevant to that. That can be a separate discussion at a separate time. You know, what's going on here is that, you know, these women involved in the gaming industry for daring to express and have an opinion on these issues are getting threatened with violence. And before they were threatened with violence and continuing, like I said, there are lots of people. There have been a few that have been threatened by violence. There have been many, many, many more who've just been continuously harassed about this stuff. And it's like, I don't know what the right thing to quote unquote do about it. I mean, the death threats should be investigated and prosecuted.
They are actually.
Some of them are. And
yes.
And harassment above a certain level. I mean, you know, you can't go after everybody who sends an annoying email, but above a certain level, when the harassment gets serious, those people should be, you know, investigated as well. I mean, it's just fundamentally inappropriate, uncivil behavior. You know, disagree with them, fine. Make an argument why they're wrong. Don't threaten them.
Yeah. Well, I think we're both in agreement on that. Okay. So, but just, all right, so in the interest of time, I think maybe we could take a break and we can talk about our next subject.
Okay. We'll take a break. Right. Back after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break. A wonderful break, yes indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break, yes. This is a break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, it is a break, and now the break is over.
Okay, we're back.
Yeah.
And by the way, the tech industry supposedly, you know, has been, yeah, like I said, they're releasing their, you know, reports on diversity and all this kind of stuff, and are quote unquote making efforts. And you know, you saw another example, the Google or whatever announced this week that they're now going to support as a benefit women freezing their eggs.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, that's interesting, but it's kind of. There's weird like undertones of like, we'll support this so you can work longer, and you know we can get your best years out of you before you.
No,
have
but
your baby.
But oh come on, look, women are doing that right.
No,
now.
I know,
and they're not.
I know it's the undertones and the way it was presented. The way this should be handled is that Google or whoever, instead of providing a separate benefit, work with their insurance company or whatever to just have it provided as part of the standard health benefit or whatever, and not make a big deal out of it. You know, but they're trying to make a big deal of, oh, look, we're being supportive of women, but you're being supportive of women in a sort of odd, self-serving way. You know, and that's not to say lots of women may want to take advantage of this. Absolutely. And it's a good benefit to have. It's not about that. It's about the way that they went about presenting it and releasing it. And, you know, it just sort
of
like.
Well, I think that they were like, the reason why they were doing it to a certain extent is because they were getting pounded the shit out of them. And they were trying to figure out something.
They're trying. They're way, just, showing out. Confident they are at it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so moving on. We wanted to talk Ebola again for a little.
Ebola.
So the bottom line here is the same as
or as it's. I've seen it called the United States of Ebola.
Whatever.
There is a thing something here. Let me read. I saw this one was funny. Fear Ebola spreads throughout the U.S. Oh. It's hyper-contagious, hits the brain, causes illusions, and almost half the U.S. population may have it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it's true. I mean, the other day, I mean, my God, there was this guy, friend of mine for a long time. You know, Jesus, the guy was battling, some terrible cancer, for God's sakes, almost died. And he was worried about Ebola. And I said, dude, really? like, I mean, my God, you almost like died. Are you worried about this?
Look, I mean, the bottom line is the same as we said last week. The fear in the U.S. is blown so dramatically out of proportion for any real threat. You know, go get your damn flu shot. You know,
yes,
worry about that.
Agreed.
But and I need to go get mine. But
so do I.
But the on the other hand, people are not worried as much as they should be about the outbreak in the countries that are affected in West Africa, because that is going to be that is on its way to being a complete disaster.
About a month ago, I had retweeted a message from somebody, you know, that they said that basically this is when we were sending all this, starting all this bombing for ISIL and stuff, ISIS, whatever the fuck you want to call it. And, you know, I realized that somebody had mentioned that Ebola in West Africa probably deserves more troops on the ground than ISIS. They're right. You know, they're totally right.
And we are sending some troops, building and hospitals and things like that, which, you know, I can support that, you know, but like
this is September 16th.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. Yeah.
There was a very good cartoon. And I'm not going to have, I'd be able to find a link or the right thing to it. But basically it showed, you know, the caption was something about the attention given to Ebola or whatever. And it had like, you know, it was like a hospital floor with bed with sick people in all the beds. And, you know, and all of the people in the beds were black.
Okay.
Except one. And all the reporters and all the doctors and everybody else
flocked around the white person.
We're all on the white guy. And it's like, you know, because, you know, who the hell cares about the thousands and thousands of people dying in the countries that are really being hit hard by this? But, you know, hey, this one guy in Texas, you know, or it might be sick or whatever, you know. And of course, the guy who died in Texas, you know, came here from there, but you know, we've had a number of healthcare workers who are affected here and in Europe, and you know, it is the amount of disproportionate attention is crazy. It's like there is a problem. Pay attention to where the problem actually is. Don't get distracted by, you know, the fact that, oh, okay, there's one locally, but guess what? You're in the freaking richest country in the world. We have the resources to take care of it. And yes, it is hard to get, you know, unless you are a direct family member who's in contact with you're one of the healthcare, the people who are at risk are the family and the healthcare providers.
It doesn't go over the internet.
I thought we covered that. Yeah, it does. It's a computer virus now. Okay. Internet Ebola.
Okay.
But yeah, if you are listening to this podcast, you probably have it by now.
Oh, okay, great.
There you go. Well, because, you know, I've been sick for 2 weeks. It must be Ebola.
That's right. It must be Ebola, of course.
That's right.
Absolutely.
How could it be anything else?
Yeah.
No, obviously not. But, like, it makes me want to, like, you know, and we were having this conversation about, like, you know, proper political discourse. It makes me want to slap people.
Yes.
you know, it's like, look, there. Pay attention where the problem actually is. Pay attention to things in proportion to the actual risk. You know, the typical American, unless you happen to be working on a healthcare worker working with an Ebola patient, you have nothing freaking to worry about. You know, and you know, even if and you know, there are people talking about. Even traveling to Africa, like it's a big freaking continent. There are only a couple of places that are really affected by this. You know, so yeah, you don't even have to worry. Oh, because there are all kinds of people talking about, well, let's not let anybody travel here from Africa.
Right.
Oh, come on.
I know.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
I know,
and,
I heard.
And even like, you know, even if you were going to travel to one of the cities that was most hard hit by this in the world, somewhere in West Africa, and you were going to go there in person, guess what? You still don't have a high risk unless you start interacting with a sick person or someone who's recently died.
Yep. Well, it's a panic. I mean, let me put it this way. The panic was so bad today that when they announced that the second person got Ebola, the stock market took a freaking nosedive. And I'm saying that it had to do with the freaking... I mean, honestly, it was a freaking panic. That's how bad it is. So I don't know. Yeah. The market was down, and then I was like,
here in front of the computer working,
and all of a sudden they announced that the second person has Ebola, and all of a sudden I just look over and the fucking market is crashing into the ground. So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and we'll talk about there are some other factors there too, but
there are other factors, but that had an impact. I mean, that and bounce back from that steep dive it took after the Ebola announcement, but still, I mean, that's how irrational people are about this, is my point.
Well, and I retweeted a little bit earlier today, about 5 hours ago as we're recording this, someone Twitter user at Cassie, CAISSIE, calm down, you are not going to get Ebola. Chances are you will be shot at some point, though.
Yes, correct. Damn straight.
Anyway, yeah, it's and you know, so much of the way the coverage is fans the flames of this stuff too, because
that goes back to our first subject today.
It goes back to our first subject, but it's just like, okay, I understand this is new. This is interesting. It's sort of a little bit unusual, but it's being so blown out of proportion. And, you know, you get all these breathless headlines. I got, I have stupid news alerts on my phone. I've gotten so many damn news alerts on this Ebola thing in the U.S. Like, you know, I haven't gotten a lot of news alerts about Ebola in Africa, but I've gotten a whole bunch of freaking news alerts about, you know, every single detail of the cases going on in Texas.
No, and that's why I thought that this cartoon The Economist put on October 11th that I tweeted out was fantastic. It had a Democratic donkey, an elephant, and some guy with a megaphone on top of a vehicle with a banner on the side that says panic. Okay, all right, and the guy is on the megaphone yelling to a map that says the United States of Ebola. Yes, and that's what it feels like. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's just, and they're all like yelling, yes, panic, my God, the second person. So that's two out of how many people live in the U.S. right now?
What are we at, like 350 million or something?
350, yeah, say, get ballpark.
Plus or minus.
Hey, give it 300 million, whatever the hell, right? Go with a low number. What is two out of 300 million? What percentage is that?
It's small.
0.0000000666.
That's 666, you say? That's the number
of
the devil.
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, it came out at 666. So that's the problem. Fuck, we're screwed.
Okay. Enough about
Ebola. My calculator just told us we're fucked. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about the economy for a segment, and then we'll get out of here, because I actually have to go pick up my mom from the airport.
Ooh, cool.
She took a little vacation too. She went out to the East Coast to visit her brother and her brother's family and stuff like that, and some other people she knew up there. So she was
I will be going next month to spend Thanksgiving with my brother in Texas. There you go. She's got the tickets this week, so there you go.
And I know you're going to come back with Ebola.
Yes, from Texas. Absolutely. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, we'll be back after this. Okay, we're here.
We're here. Okay.
Okay. Let me give you your little money introduction. Okay, Vaughn, what happened to the economy this week?
Everybody is in a fucking panic. Okay, well, first of all, okay, so oil has been sliding down
and
a lot.
Other energy too, right? Did I see? Or just oil?
I mean, the big thing has been oil, okay? Right. And I don't know, there was... The thing is, like, everything, right? I talked about how the economy, like, around the world is kind of weak and we've got some issues, especially, you know, oil going down has some crazy impacts, okay, especially to a lot of foreign countries. But, you know, the calculation right now is whether the positive impacts will outweigh the negative impacts. But some data came out today on consumer spending that was like weak, and then people got all freaked out, and then everybody's been panicky over the whole Ebola thing, and then more Ebola news came out, and today the freaking stock market just, you know, nosedived like four, and the Dow dropped like close to 460 points until it recovered a little bit. But I just think that people, like I said before, they're... You know, the market had been up for a long time. There are signs of weakness, especially in Europe and in Asia and other places. And I don't know, people just are today with the whole Ebola thing, that just the panic, just, you know, add that to the whole mix and everybody was just in a fucking panic. Now, here's the thing today, 6 or 7 years ago, when oil would go down, it was always seen as a positive for the U.S.
Well, okay? And I just want to say, in general, I mean, cheap energy, that's what everybody wants, right?
Well, that's what they were saying. But here's the thing. Over the last 6 or 7 years, oil production in North America and jobs related to that have increased so much that some people are concerned that the fact that if the oil price goes down, that could actually turn into somewhat of a negative for the U.S. economy, where typically it was a positive. Now, I just saw somebody that made an analyst from Citigroup just posted a note today saying that despite all this, that the net that there would be a net positive effect to the global economy to the tune of a $1.1 trillion stimulus from the oil price plunge. So whatever negative effects it may have on some pockets, you know, say like people like Russia, Venezuela, they're going to be completely fucked. But really, I mean, who really cares about them? To be honest, the rest of us apparently are looking at quite a windfall in terms of economics. So,
I mean, if nothing else, as you mentioned, the gas prices dropping, you know, however much money you save a month on gas, potentially going to other things.
Right.
The other potentially more productive things.
Right. Absolutely. So,
of course, you get exactly the same amount of productive use out of gasoline, no matter how much.
Well, think about this. How many miles do you estimate you drive a week, for example?
My commute is about 50 miles a day. So,
So 250, 300 miles a week?
Something like that.
Okay, so 300 times 52 weeks. I'll give you, that's 15,600 miles a year, all right? So say your car maybe gives you like about 26, 27 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we go over 26. That's 600 gallons a year, all right? So 600 gallons at, what are we talking? If it was at $4 a gallon, what is it, 360? 360 times 600 gallons is $2,160. If I cut that down by 30%, you save $648 a year. That's $60. Hey, you know, depending on how much money you make a year, think about it. Say, for example, look, you make more money, but say you take a lot of people in the U.S., lower income earners that have been tight. You get an extra $650 a year. Hey, that's gonna make a big difference to them. Say you've got two people in the house that have to do that commute daily.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking 1300 bucks. I mean, it becomes a nice amount of change.
It's $1,300 that you potentially spend on something that is more stimulative, because you're buying the gas anyway. But right. now you're going to do something with it. You're going to buy something. You're going to do something, or maybe you pay off debt. You know,
maybe you pay off debt. Whatever.
Yeah.
You go out. You know. You buy some stuff for your house. You get a TV. Get some more gifts for children at Christmas. Who knows? You know. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think I think today the whole thing. My point about more talking about this was, I as I saw the news headlines come and I saw the stock market like really dropping. I really think a lot of the big drop that then came back had a lot to do with that second when the news came out of that second Ebola patient. Oh my God. It was just like, it was free fall. I mean, in the stock market, it was just, you know, everybody was like just going crazy. So I don't know if there's a lot more.
Hitting on the energy stuff though, that we talked about, we've been talking about the trends towards, you know, cheaper non-fossil fuel based energy, renewable energies, things like that. And the economic balance that those things become more sustainable as the price of oil goes up. The opposite is true when it goes down too, right? Do you see this
stalling out
the push towards those technologies?
I think it doesn't open the short term, but I think that the thing is that at the same time, the reality is that the price of that stuff is still dropping so quickly anyway, that I think even with an oil drop at 20-30%, it still makes the other stuff economical. Let's face it, $80 oil is still not that cheap, okay, you know? Relative to the last 10-15 years, what we've paid. I mean, 10-15 years ago, we were at $30 a barrel. And we were at 80 something. Like right now, that's even with a freaking plunge. I mean, we were over $100. I still think that, yes, it's like it slows that down, but not enough that it causes that trend to go away.
Well, and of course, you know, when we talked about those trends, you know, those trends are very pronounced in sort of the West at this point. But if you talk globally, we're still accelerating how fast we're burning carbon.
Well, actually, look, one of the things today about why the price of oil has been dropping is because demand estimates for oil have been going down.
Right.
A lot. Okay. People are starting all of a sudden to use a lot less. And that is one of the reasons why the price of oil is dropping, is because consumption, it's not been so much the supply. It's been a demand problem. Just, I think it was the IEA recently just cut estimates for oil consumption substantially. There's just not as much demand as people expected. So, I mean, take it from that perspective. What the heck does that mean? It was a matter of fact, it's a story I tweeted yesterday. The IEA cut the outlook for oil demand growth by 22%.
Right, and now that's a cut to the growth rate, not a cut to the amount being used. But still,
well, correct. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that before, the growth was really closely correlated to the previous growth before. So what I'm saying is that you can see that demand, as we've been talking about, all of a sudden is changing substantially.
Which is probably a good thing. I mean, with all the talk about climate change, and we had those conversations a few weeks ago. Anything that reduces how much carbon we're burning is probably a net plus. And if it can happen sort of quote unquote naturally without having all sorts of ham-handed intervention to try to force it, so much the better.
Yes.
Because we've proven time and time again that efforts to force behavior change, even if they're successful, can have all kinds of unfortunate, unwanted side effects.
Because I think we've shown ourselves that most of our big transformations happen not so much planned, but like something all of a sudden just evaporates like quickly, and you're like, "What the fuck happened? Like 20 years ago, really?"
Well, and if
we rented videotapes.
Well, you know, if anything, sort of government and social forces try to
stop
that progress. I mean,
right.
If you look at, you know, if you bring up the videotapes, you know, if you look at how the movie, TV, and music industries have been dragged kicking and screaming into the modern world on this
stuff.
That's
right.
You know, they did not want to go.
Without regulation, I mean, shit. I mean, forget it.
I mean, one of the news stories we didn't talk about is HBO finally deciding to sell a plan that you can get even if you don't have cable or satellite. You know, and it's like, okay, yeah, great. But, you know, it's taken so long. You know,
so long, but hey, you know what? They're not. The one thing I give credit to HBO is that they're not being a late mover on it compared to like the rest of their competitors.
Well, compared to their old media competitors, but
yes.
the reason they're jumping is because they see the writing on the wall with folks like Netflix starting right. to get into this industry as well, and you know they're nowhere close to being on HBO's scale right now, but they can see that they might be given another 5 to 10 years if HBO didn't start moving.
Right. Right.
You know, but you know, for the last 20 years, the whole industry of these things has been all about trying to push through legislation to kill the competition from the internet.
Well, you know, that's what happens a lot with monopolies. The main thing they try to do is like try to keep it all together, but then all of a sudden you get an AT&T moment. Like, you remember ever signing up for a long distance calling plan not too long ago? Mm. And where the fuck did that go?
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't exist. I mean, that was like 10 years ago, for God's sakes. It was like, boom, gone. Disappeared.
Yeah.
You know? I think the market forces just are sometimes, you know, just
too strong to be fought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
I mean, a lot of these efforts they've definitely slowed things down. But at some point you have to give in to them. Like you can only hold back progress so long before, you know, it just becomes a wave you can't stop.
Right.
And so I think you've seen that in the entertainment industries. You know, and I would have loved for things to move a lot faster than they have. And I think there's a lot of evolution still to come. But, you know, like you said, over the course of 10, 15, 20 years, it's unrecognizable from what it was.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and you may be right that the same thing is coming in the energy world.
I think so. I really do. I think that it's, you know, it's going to happen. It's like it's going to hit a lot of people all of a sudden, you know, so much faster than they expected.
Well, and the question is, like you said, the question's on these economic impacts. So let's say, you know, all the oil companies collapse. And even if you've got replacement things, there's a lot of potential disruption. Now,
well,
you would expect
shit.
They don't all
collapse.
Well,
look at the steel industry with a collapse in the U.S., for God's sakes, in the 70s and 80s. I mean, Jesus, 40, 50 years ago, U.S. Steel was the largest company in the United States. I mean, come on. Now they're nobody, you know? Yeah. You know, collapse and renewal are a good thing, you know, many times, you know?
Creative destruction.
Absolutely.
You know, the problem with the thing with creative destruction is you almost always end up someplace better in the end, but sometimes it's really painful getting there.
No, I totally agree. But I mean, it's better than trying to hold on to something that doesn't work. You know, I mean, you know, then you wind up with the opposite where you just keep propping up these things that are just unsustainable.
Daddy.
And until
yes, Alex?
It makes the situation worse.
I didn't bother you when she comes and asks me when she comes.
Okay.
Can you get the book? And we didn't finish reading.
Okay, I'll look in a minute.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
You're welcome.
So did you hear all that?
No.
He came in to ask me that when mommy asks him whether or not he bothered me during the podcast to say no.
No, ask you.
Oh, when she asks me, yes.
Okay, no problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well.
All right, well,
I think
okay, we're
done
here. Yep.
And I have to hop in the car momentarily to go get my mom from the airport, as I mentioned. Okay. So thanks, everybody, for listening to yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. We appreciate your listenership. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or find me on Twitter at abelsmay or Yvonne@iambo. And we love to hear from you. Tell your friends. Hey, Alex, you want to help say goodbye? Okay,
there you go.
Into the microphone. Say goodbye.
Hi.
That's not goodbye.
Hi. 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 Bakiak o shaggy. Ajirapiako.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye everyone.
Bye everybody at this house and everywhere.
Okay, bye bye. Bye bye.
Forever do they.
Adios.
Bye.